that, and what did you think about Cora saying he did nothing wrong with the Red Sox? What did you think about the whole thing?
Yeah, and it was in line with what we had talked about over the last 6 weeks, that, you know, Major League Baseball, as they're going through, they are obviously working on something very specific, which was this video operator. I will tell you that I've heard that there hasn't been nearly the level of cooperation from the players for Major League Baseball investigators as there was for the Houston Astros thing. And, you know, I think it's reasonable speculation that the Red Sox players probably saw what happened with the Astros yeah. and the backlash, and, you know, they clammed up. But at the same time, there was, you know, no evidence beyond that. Now, I talked with baseball executives with other teams since this came out, and the perspective of at least some of them is, yeah, what was in that report on the Red Sox is probably a lot like what a lot of teams were doing, that there was somebody who was, during the course of the game, you know, letting players know about sequencing. But the difference, and where people felt like the Astros crossed the line, was the real-time stuff. I think a lot of teams were trying to break down sequences of opposing catchers, and, you know, before the game or during the game, trying to catch them. But the difference was relaying that information immediately to the hitter after seeing it as just before a pitch was being thrown.
Buster, after this comes out, any chance Alex Cora is managing the Red Sox this year, next year?
I think it's absolutely fair speculation. And look, you know, the Red Sox, when they had the conference call tonight, they will take the interim tag off of Ron Renneke now that he's been cleared in the commissioner's report. And so he is their manager. But as we talked about before, the Red Sox leadership has loved Alex. They've maintained communication with him. Actually, the coaching staff has during spring training. You know, they continue to draw upon his knowledge in spring. I don't know if they've had recent conversations, but it wouldn't shock anybody if they were to go back in and were to bring him back for next year. I you know, during spring, you know, I had a conversation with Ron Renneke in which he was talking about how he thought Alex had a special way to communicate with players. I think the Red Sox ownership saw that. Now, you know, is it possible that Ron Renneke could impress them to the degree that they feel like, you know what, we want to keep him? They certainly are in a position to do that if that's what they choose, but they're also in a position to bring Alex back. I double-checked with sources this afternoon who told me nothing in place prevents Alex from being returned to Boston manager for next year. And one other thing, I did find it interesting that, you know, Rob Manfred, the commissioner, he could have changed the wording on Alex's suspension to a different set of different wording than what he gave Jeff Luhnow and AJ Hinch, but he didn't do that. And in the end, Alex will wind up actually having a less of a suspension than either Jeff or AJ Hinch, because you know, his suspension only began today, and like those other two, it's tied to the end of the 2020 World Series, which, for all we know, may not even happen.
Buster, do you think that the video operator was operating roguely, as was in the report, or do you think there was a directive from upper management?
I don't know the answer to that question. You know, if I were to bet the family farm back in Vermont, I bet you that it was more complicated than what was in the report. I think it would make sense that it would be more complicated, but I have no information that you know, that's actually the case.
Buster Olney of ESPN joins us every Wednesday at this time, thanks to Lucky's Trailer Sales and Peterbilt of Vermont, online at luckystrailers.com. I want to move up entirely here onto this Gronk thing, because I was thinking about this. So Gronk leaves the Patriots, moves over to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and we talked about him just being tired of Bill Belichick. Do you think that today's managers have to act different in baseball than the guys like Belichick, the old-style guys?
Heck yeah. No question. You know, the days of the field general manager, you know, the Billy Martins who basically running the teams, or the Earl Weavers, those are long gone. You know, the comparison I've made the last few years is that the manager's like the White House spokesperson. And absolutely, they have to, you know, what you hear all the time, when Joe Girardi was let go by the Yankees, what were the words that Brian Cashman used, that that the communication hadn't been the same? Why did the Red Sox leadership value Alex Cora communication? Aaron Boone, what are the Red Sox players or Yankees players like him? Because of communication, you know, the managers in recent years who've run into problems, Mike Matheny, Girardi, et cetera, that's all it's about, is maintaining a relationship, in some cases probably deferring to the players and commiserating with them in a way that I doubt Bill Belichick's really into.
Buster, who was the most difficult manager to play for? It's got to probably be back in the day. I don't think anybody real now is kind of tough, are they?
Boy, I mean, you heard all kinds of stories about Leo Durocher. Yeah, I mean, back in the day, those old-time managers, John McGraw, people like that. But they were the most important person in the organization at that time, and that's just simply not the case. You can't come in and run roughshod over players in this era, because you'll be out as manager very quick. It's a very different dynamic when from what the Patriots have with Belichick. Then I can't even think of a manager who has that kind of power. I actually believe that before Alex got fired as the Red Sox manager, I thought Alex Cora had more power than any manager in baseball.
Wow.
Because you just don't see people that managers have that kind of centralized power the way they used to.
Buster, have you been watching any baseball in Taiwan? I mean, is it getting any reception to the people playing in it?
A little bit. I know that in the mornings, as I'm doing my work, 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, that I'll see tweets from different people, writers saying how great it is, my colleague Marley Rivera saying how great it is to watch baseball. But I haven't seen, a massive response to it. I think there's some level of excitement about Korea and the idea that, okay, on May 5th, the Professional Baseball League in South Korea is going to start up in earnest, and maybe we can use that as a benchmark to restart baseball here. But it's like talking about apples and oranges. You know, South Korea's population, guys, United States population compared to South Korea is about 6.5 times larger. But our rate of daily infections for the month of April is about 300 times greater, okay? So it's apples and oranges comparing the two situations. And here's another thing, too. As each day goes by, and I'm hearing more and more, I think right now the relationship between the Players Association and Major League Baseball may be as much or a greater impediment to baseball returning this year as the current situation with the virus.
Why is that? Because we've heard about the, rule changes, pace of play, money, arbitration, all that. Which issue now is it that they're fighting about?
Well, without getting too deep into the weeds, it's basically what sort of adjustments are going to be made to account for revenues lost. Because if baseball does come back this year, let's face it, in all likelihood it would be in empty stadiums, and, 40% of the revenues, according to Major League Baseball, are generated from fans in the ballpark, where the other money is generated from ticket sales, et cetera. But, there needs to be a sense of collaboration. There seems to be a sense of fairness. And there needs to be some imagination. You know what? I'm going to write a column later this week, and I'm going to compare it. You guys have seen that movie Apollo 13.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of Major League Baseball right now. Like, the ship is damaged, and they have to wait to figure out how to land it and work together to do that. And right now, the union the other day had put out a statement talking about a past agreement that they had, and they need to live up to those terms. And Scott Boras has said some things about living up to contracts. I think that everyone needs to get past that mindset and say, you know what, this is a terrible, unforeseen situation. We just have to figure out how to make it work with what we have. And I think if anybody tries to hold the sport to the letter of whatever agreements have been done in the past, that will be an absolute disaster for everybody.
Buster Olney, ESPN MLB Insider, thanks to Lucky's Trailer Sales and Peterbilt of Vermont, joins us every single Wednesday at this time. How about the discussions you saw yesterday, or the report yesterday from Baseball America about Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball going to come to that agreement where there's going to be 42 teams cut, including the Lake Monsters? What are you hearing about that? Because MILB was trying to refute it.
Yeah, and Major League Baseball was to some degree. I'm waiting like everybody else is, I think, to hear what's coming out of their conversations today. You know, fingers crossed. I would say that, you know, at a time when baseball is clearly going to face enormous loss of revenue, I have to believe that not only does it put the teams into a mode where they're looking for ways to save money, and that'll only be accelerated, but also I think potentially reduces the leverage of the minor leagues, where, you know, arguments that they may have made 6-7 months ago going through Congress, really difficult to get traction on those when there are obviously larger issues at play.
Yeah. But Buster, do they have any other options for the Lake Monsters, or what can we do up here? What are we going to do up here at Burlington without a baseball team? What could college? Do we try to get college going again with University of Vermont, or what?
Well, they keep on, you know, Major League Baseball keeps on referring to this plan where they want to, you know, have this other league and, you know, have teams be a part of that. But I don't have specifics on that. I don't know what form that would take. Here's the other thing, too. The simple reality is, and it's part of the reason why I think the Red Sox decision took so long, is that Major League Baseball's got about 1,000 balls in the air, and 999 of them related to the coronavirus. Mm. And so I just wonder how slow it'll be before we really know all the details, the potential plans for cities that might lose affiliates, like Burlington, and it's going to be a while before we see actually what takes shape.
I mean, when you look at the financial aspects of all of this, it just sounds ridiculous to me to drop any of these teams for $1 million. But what do you think will happen to baseball in some of these small towns, like a Burlington, if this goes through? And is the financial saving good for the growth of the sport as a whole?
Well, the context and the financial saving is going to feel a lot different. It's going to feel a lot different now than it did 6 months ago, only because of the larger issues at play. You know, with teams potentially losing billions of dollars collectively, and you know, looking for ways. I mean, literally in the last 24 hours, guys, I've been in contact with employees of various teams who were hoping that we would be tweeting out that, you know, the Detroit Tigers are keeping their employees beyond May 31st, okay? The Padres committed to keeping some member of baseball ops through October 31st. A lot of people are worried about being fired or about being furloughed or being let go. I had one executive say to me today that he thinks that there are going to be hundreds of employees who are let go eventually who will never get back into baseball.
Wow.
And so that's what I mean about, you know, the plans about where's minor league baseball going to be in 2021. I just think right now there's not enough oxygen for them to really be focused on that. And whereas 6 months ago, I remember joking with you guys about, you know, $1 million for any franchise, to put that number to context, that's less than what Gerrit Cole is supposed to make under his current contract for pitching 6 innings. Well, now, with the teams losing as much money potentially as it looks like they're going to, that they're going to be looking to save money in a lot of different ways.
Buster, moving back to the Red Sox, my last question on that: the conspiracy theorists out there say they put this report out there today so it would get buried by NFL draft talk. Do you think any truth to that?
You know, it's possible, I guess, but I mean, there's certainly been, as you guys know, it's typical that when teams want to bury news, they do it on a Friday, late Friday afternoon when no one's paying attention. I just think that they've been so busy, A, and B, I mentioned the lack of cooperation generally, that I think it took them a lot more time to do it. And let's face it, you know, I heard a story about one Red Sox official who'd been in contact about, you know, possible issues related to the restart of play, coronavirus, et cetera. And this official told me that, you know, he had at least 6 or 7 conversations with Major League Baseball over the last 3 weeks. Not a single time was the investigation mentioned. It was all these other issues which are on the front burner. And let's face it, as time has gone on, especially because they never really found anything that rose to the level of what the Astros did, then I think it became a back burner issue. And I think that's part of the reason why it's taken some time.
Buster, A-Rod, if he buys the Mets, will you be the general manager?
Oh, man. I can tell you this. I'm not surprised that he did this, because in our Sunday night baseball meetings that we have on Sunday morning, you know, getting ready for the production. I can't tell you how many times Alex makes reference to how much he loved the Mets when he was a kid. He was a big Keith Hernandez guy. You know, when he signed with the Rangers back in, 2000, what he really wanted to do was sign with the Mets and all that. And here's the other thing, too. You got to believe that part of what Alex said, I don't know what the actual sale price would be, but you got to believe that Alex is looking into it in part because he understands that the franchise value, the sale price, has to have taken a huge hit.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, if you know, we heard that the sale price last fall was going to be $2.6 billion before that fell apart. If the Mets held to that sale price now, I'd be like, yeah, no thank you.
Yeah.
Because of what we don't know about the hit that baseball is going to take as an industry and with each franchise.
Buster, your favorite phrase, you used it again in this conversation today, I bet the family farm in Vermont. Now, do you ever have conversations with your family in Randolph Center about somebody actually taking you up on that?
See, I think I told you guys that 2 years ago, I actually bought half the farm of my own, so I don't have to clear it with any of my siblings.
You bought the farm.
Although, you know, my mom is buried there, so I don't take that lightly when I say that.